Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man that knows you should only kill people with kindness. He is the mild-mannered captain.
Or you could try a shovel. It's good to be seen. It's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Tonight, we are drinking Grinder Punch by the good men and women at the Sound Growler Brewing Company in Tinley Park, Illinois. Garage grade, 4 out of 5 bottle caps. This West Coast Pale Ale is brewed with Pilsner and Munich malts. Add the Pacific Northwest hops and you have a beer that delivers a pungent aroma with a clean, crisp finish.
Stings the nostrils.
ABV 5.6%. And Grinder Punch was brought to us by all of you fantastic folks, and a special thanks to David in Bedford, Pennsylvania.
And a big nice jib to Captain Tina in Ottawa, Canada.
Here's a long distance cheers to Eli Shiva from Jerusalem, Israel.
And filling up the fridge, we have Sarah in Pocahontas, Arkansas.
And a shout out all the way to Tara, who is in Newcastle, Australia. And last but not least, a cheers to Joel in Caroline Springs, Australia.
If you'd like to donate to the beer fund, go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate banner.
And it's official, everybody. This is fantastic, wonderful, exciting stuff. Something we've been working very hard on, the captain especially hard on. Wow.
Okay. Alrighty then.
Awkward. Listen up. This is fantastic. I'm very proud of this. We've been trying to figure out a way for a long time to bring all of our back catalog to you, to everyone, for free.
Yeah.
And so, starting in May, that's going to be available to you on the Stitcher app. You can get every True Crime Garage episode from episode 1 all the way up to today.
Yep. And it'll be free on the Stitcher app. Also, on Stitcher Premium, we have our new weekly show. It's kind of the behind-the-scenes show, update show. It's called Off the Record. So those will start in May as well.
All right, let's gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
With Tinley Park's police chief, he tells me this sketch was released on the eve of the anniversary on purpose because people tend to have the most interest in this cold case this time of year. The new 3D image is now hanging inside the police station and it's broadcast everywhere. It is an enhanced version of a previous sketch drawn from an eyewitness account in 2008. The new photo uses facial identification technology to make it more lifelike. Now, whoever that man is entered a Tinley Park Lane Bryant 10 years ago and announced a robbery. He ordered a group of women into a back room, tied them up with duct tape, and shot 5 of them dead. One of the victims dialed 911. Police released a snippet of that call years ago.
911 emergency. Lane Bryant. Tinley Park, hurry. Stay on the line.
Police say the suspect's voice can also be heard on the background of that call. Detectives have now isolated the voice, although his words are almost indistinguishable. Tinley Park's chief says 1 to 2 new tips come in on the case every week. They hope this sketch and voice recording will give them even more leads. Can you believe it's been 10 years?
No, it's time goes by, but we've worked on it steadily for 10 years. Right. Continue to work on it. There's 5 women that need us to clear this up.
Yeah,
In the trailer there, Captain, we hear the news reporter asking the police chief, can you believe it's been 10 years? And that's exactly the case here. In 2008, five women were killed inside of the Lane Bryant store in what police would describe as a botched robbery or a robbery turned violent. Now, you hear the police chief there stating, no, we cannot believe that it's been 10 years. This is a case that they've worked very hard. They've spent millions of dollars trying to find the guy that shot these five women to death.
Mm-hmm.
We also still, 10 years later, they have a full-time officer working the case, as well as another officer that works the case part-time. Over the years, I've heard from this detective that there have been three times throughout the last 10 years where he believed that they were very close to solving the case, that they had a suspect. Three times they had a suspect that they liked so much, they thought that they were going to be able to provide the families with some justice finally after all these years.
Yeah, or at least bring charges to these suspects.
And today we know that they currently do not have any suspects or anyone that they have named publicly as a suspect in this case. Now, I do, before we get into some things today, we got a lot to cover. We want to go through the 911 call. We want to go through some vehicles that were in the area at the time, some things that could lead us into some thoughts about our suspect here. But before we do so, Captain, I kind of wanted to highlight some pieces of the investigation along the way. So in the very early parts of the investigation, remember we said that the police had one thing working in their advantage, and that was that a Tinley Park police officer was parked in a vehicle just that was adjacent to the parking lot of the Lane Bryant at the time of the 911 call.
Yeah, about 200 yards away.
Yes, so this officer was on the scene within just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, and a couple minutes after that, there's going to be multiple law enforcements that are going to be at the scene.
Yeah, they're showing up and arriving to the area, multiple police departments. The Chicago PD helicopter was in the air shortly after the crime was discovered. So what's so weird here, Captain, is that we have this guy that he kills these women. He walks out of the store. We can see the huge police response that's going on in the area almost immediately afterwards. And yet somehow this guy is able to disappear as soon as he leaves the store. He's not highly noticeable. He gets away somehow. He's able to slip back into the fold or hide in the background.
Well, we do have on video camera two cars that left.
Yes.
One being an SUV, one being a sedan.
Now, police investigated. They did investigate whether the killer had any connections to one of the victims, because as we had stated in the last episode, most robbers probably wouldn't hit a clothing store early in the morning and probably wouldn't stay 40 minutes like this guy did. For the first 51 days of the investigation, nearly 50 investigators worked to find the Lane Bryant killer. Together, they logged over 30,000 hours on the case. The cost of the investigation surpassed $400,000. This was just in the first 51 days. Another interesting thing here, Captain, when we talk about the pursuit of this man, the pursuit of the killer that fled, police even locked down stores in the area, including a Super Target, PetSmart, and Office Max, searching the area with guns drawn. This case has been, it's been interesting to research in the sense that I know a guy that lives in the greater Chicago area. He's not in law enforcement, but he's familiar with law enforcement. And so he and I, over the past couple of weeks, have been trading a lot of emails back and forth about this case. And one thing that he told me was that his name, we'll call him Greg. I didn't get permission if I'm allowed to use his name. But anyway, one thing he told me was that his wife had been in a store that was just within a mile of the Lane Bryant store at the time of the killings. And she was at this place called Dinner by Design. And she was there with several friends of hers. And during this time, the Tinley police stormed in. They had their hands on their holsters. Some of them had guns drawn. And they locked the door behind them when they came in to search the business. Now, once the business was cleared, they told everybody what had happened and said that everybody needed to stay inside. And they locked the doors as they left the store and then went on to clear another store. Mm-hmm. So they were heavily, heavily in pursuit of this man with cars, helicopters, and on foot.
Well, not only the immediate response was huge by law enforcement, but they've continued to work this heavily and use every technology that they can.
Yeah, and they've allowed this to take them down some different avenues in pursuit of this person. They even used the IRS to do some background searches for them. They used NASA. They had NASA pull satellite images of vehicles that were in lots outside of the store within minutes of shots being fired. The Secret Service has helped with phone records. Foreign police agencies have run ballistics tests for this case. Illinois State Police have screened weapons that get turned in or brought back to see if they can match it to the handgun that was used by the killer.
And I'm assuming that they probably ran the DNA as well.
That's an interesting question. And I do you want to get into that now? Because I know you're kind of chomping at the bit to get at that. Let me wrap this up real quick so I don't forget something. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wanted to mention that in this year alone, to show you the activity involved in the community here, is that just this year alone, they have received 87 leads that were called in. And over the course of the 10 years, they've investigated and received more than 7,000 leads total since the murders. So investigators have gone as far as London to check new fingerprint technology on the shell casings that were found that day. And the village, Tinley Park, has spent nearly $2 million on this investigation. So the detectives have continued to filter through these leads up to this day. They're going to continue to do so. Mm-hmm. They've categorized and logged all these leads, and they've investigated them all. So a huge effort, as you had stated. Now, regarding the DNA, this is a big point of contention for me. And it doesn't seem to be a point of contention for anybody else when you start looking into this case. And what I mean by that is I'm not convinced that either A, that they have DNA, or that they have good DNA.
Right.
And here's my thoughts on this. And okay, so in doing research for this case, one place that it led me, and I think you fell into this as well, was Reddit. There's a lot of discussion about this case on Reddit.
Yeah.
And
I love Reddit, by the way.
But as far as a resource, it's not always the best investigative tool because there's a lot of conversation on there. There's a big conversation on there that's a unique one and a good idea. A very good idea is that the reason why this case might not be solved is that all these years, police have said that they're looking for a man.
Yeah.
Where in fact, this might be a woman.
Aha.
Got him. Or her.
Got
something.
That's my gut feeling. For whatever reason, before we even, researched this at all, for whatever reason, I was watching some report, some old news report, and I just went, I don't think it's a man.
Well, and then my first response to that is, well, they have DNA.
Right.
And my first thought then would be, well, if they have DNA and they've said for 10 years that they're looking for a man, they wouldn't want to screw up their investigation. They need the public's help here.
Right.
They would not want to screw up their investigation and say that they're looking for a man when in fact it's a woman. That they would never do that. So that has led people to believe that they've tested the DNA that they had and it's the evidence points to it being a man.
Right. But maybe they don't have good enough DNA.
That's where I question this whole thing.
Yeah. Or what if you have an eyewitness, right? That we have a surviving witness.
And for the record, she's always said it's a man.
Right.
She believes it to be a man.
Which I think we're calling her Martha.
Yes.
So Martha says, I believe that this guy, it was a man. Then they get the DNA back from under the fingernails, possibly, because we have fingernail clippings. And we get touch DNA back, possibly. Right. And then they test it and they go, oh, well, there's some female DNA here. This must be the victim's DNA. And that is
a contaminant.
Right.
Well, because if it were separate, they could decipher that it's separate, and they could figure out that it came from the victim. You know, they would test the victim as well.
Yeah, but not always. I mean, we've seen cases where they've tested people and then accusations that, you know, somebody's kid is not their kid, that it was,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
So, no, I see what you're saying.
So labs can get this wrong. So, but I just wonder if that threw them off and they were like, well, this DNA evidence is no good because we don't have any sign of male DNA evidence in this test, is what I'm saying.
I think you lost me, because I think the counter argument has always been it has to be a man because they have DNA evidence.
But I don't think that's why they think it's a man. I think they think it's a man because of eyewitness. And I have not seen anywhere that they said we tested DNA evidence and it's a man.
Thank you. Thank you. Now here.
Sorry, I'm a little frustrated.
All right. But before we get too far into this, Captain, my gut feeling is that it's a man. But you're my boy. I'm going to take your back here.
You're my boy, Blue.
Well, and the reason why I will not discredit the possibility of it being a woman is this. Anytime that I've seen a debate on if it's a man or a woman, the person always tries to end the debate supporting the fact that it's a man by stating they have DNA, they would know if it's a man or a woman, they've always said it's a man, so it has to be a man. Like you just said, though, researching this case for 2 weeks, I couldn't find anywhere. I couldn't find it printed in any newspaper. I couldn't find it where the video footage of a officer, a detective, a police chief at any time outrightly stating we have DNA of this suspect.
Mm-hmm.
They always hint that they might have DNA. They always throw out statements that would suggest that they have DNA. That doesn't mean that they have DNA on this guy or girl. What this means is they could be trying to put this person off kilter. They could probably be trying to put this person off ease. We have DNA that you left at the crime scene,
mm-hmm.
because we have fingernail clippings, or we found blood underneath one of the victim's fingernails. There were things that were left at the crime scene. This just implies that they have DNA. They never outwardly state that they 100% do. And not only were you unable to find that, I was unable to find that. And I emailed my friend, quote unquote, Greg in Chicago, mm-hmm. who was well aware of this case. And he said the same thing. At no point have I ever come across where the police are outwardly saying that they, in fact, have DNA. And to further that they've tested it to confirm that it's a man. So I think if that's going to be your argument, your counterpunch there, it doesn't work for me. Because when you throw that out there and you state that is a fact, please post that link underneath your argument so we can verify that, check the box, and make sure that it's no longer a concern. So this is where we give the homework portion from time to time on the show, Captain. If anybody can find a link where there is a officer directly involved in this investigation that is being quoted in a newspaper or being interviewed, and we can see the words coming out of their mouth that they have DNA, please post a link to that on our blog at truecrimegarage.com.
Right. And so the other problem, too, is that they said that the suspect was possibly 5'9 to 6 foot tall. So you're talking about a gap of maybe 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you go 3 inches lower, now you're talking about a gap of five or a height of 5'6 to 5'9, which would be more stereotypical female height.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And then the big thing for me is the 911 call. Now what police have stated, or multiple media sources have stated, is they believe that you can hear the suspect's voice on the 911 call.
Yes.
So do we want to get to that?
Yes. Let's go ahead and play the 911 clip that we played yesterday.
911 emergency. Mike Bryant. We're at Tinley Park. Hurry. Stay on the line. Stay on the line. Let me get you to Tinley Park. Don't hang up.
Captain, real quick here, I want to throw this out to the listeners. There's a toll-free number out there where you can call and you can hear a longer version of this 911 call, and they actually replay the portion that they believe to be the suspect, which is heard in the background. And on our clip that we just played, you can hear the suspect, or what we believe to be the suspect, a little bit in the background as well. Now, we didn't include this version on the show because, frankly, the audio that the captain just provided, that 911 clip that is shorter, the audio from that is much better than a lot of the stuff out there, even that what you will hear on this toll-free number. But the number for anybody out there that's interested, and this is also where you can provide tips too. And that's the key thing with this number here. The number is 866-853-6222. And that's a number that has been put up and paid for by the Tinley Park Police Department. Again, that number is 866-853-6222. You can call that and hear a longer version of the clip, and you could leave a tip there as well with your information. Now, let's talk about that 911 clip a little bit here, Captain, because there is a portion that they do not play in that clip that we played, and it's where you can hear what is believed to be the suspect talking before Rhoda hangs up the phone with 911.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I did, because I had a lot of trouble trying to decipher what this suspect is saying. And so what I did was I got online and I did a bunch of hunting around, and I thought, you know what? Let's find the general consensus of others out there of what they believe that they are hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, this is very choppy. A lot of it's not full sentences, but some of the things that are believed to be being said by the suspect in the background is as follows. That after Rhoda is told not to hang up the phone, you hear the suspect going on about something. And it's believed that he, or she, I guess I should say, mm-hmm. is possibly saying the following: "Relax, get over here. You're such a hero, right?" Now, that "you're such a hero, right" is a one portion of the tape that is highly talked about. But the general consensus seems to be that the word "hero" is somewhere in there, because I've seen other versions that are very close to that that says something like, "Don't be a hero, huh?"
Right.
Or "you don't want to be a hero, right?" So something about a hero. It's also believed to be heard that he says, "You're going to die, you're lucky, and I'm losing it." Now, during the course, this is one thing that we are not hearing, and Tinley Park police have been upfront about this. During the course of that suspect kind of rambling on, and it actually sounds like he is kind of directing the hostages or yelling directly at one of them
mm-hmm.
in the background, there are responses from the victims that are in the room with him that the police have edited out before it was released to the public.
Right.
So there's more information on the original tape that they're not going to release. And I think probably for good reason. But the one thing that I seem to be able to make out pretty clearly is that one line of "I'm losing it." Now, I don't know that I hear exactly that, maybe a different, slightly different version of that sentence, but the word "losing" seems to be pretty clear at some point in this audio.
At the beginning, I hear almost like a, "Yo, I'm tired of yelling."
Yeah.
So let's just play the clip one more time.
911 emergency.
Hey, Brian.
You know,
where at? Stay on the line. Stay on the line. Let me get you to Tinley Park. Don't hang up.
Well, let me just loop the one part where it's, you can clearly tell it's somebody else, like the third person, if you will, on the call, the suspect.
You know, where at? Stay on the line. Stay on the line.
One more time.
You know, where at? Stay on the line. Stay on the
line. Right. So if I have to mimic that, right, it's like, "Yo, I'm not dying again, no. Right.
Well, what I hear is, and this is not a portion of the tape that we've analyzed. I don't know that others have tried to figure out what the suspect is saying there, because the whispering coming from the victim and the dispatcher are so prominent here.
Right.
I don't know that this has been.
But it's not important. That's what I'm saying.
What's not important?
What I'm saying is not that important on what the person in the background saying. If this is the suspect, what I'm doing is just, "Yo, no, right." That's my point on making it more of a, it's a woman's voice. It's a woman's range. I mean, you'd think if it was a man, it'd be like, yo, I'm tired of yelling. That's way down here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking, you have to go up pretty high in the male register to hit what notes they're saying. I mean, even when you speak, you're speaking in notes. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? So that's what I'm saying. To me, it's like, it doesn't even matter what they're saying. It's like, I audibly hear if that is the suspect in the background and not a victim, because we do have, we have one victim on the phone, so we have four other victims that would be in the room. If they believe they're not talking and that is the suspect, to me, that's a female voice.
Right. But at the same time, though, I kind of point out what I think I hear the person to be saying, because I think that tells you if it is the suspect or if it is one of the other victims. Because to me, it almost sounds like the person is saying, I'm tired of yelling, looking for blah, blah, blah. Almost like the person is announcing to the people that they've taken hostage that I'm tired of asking you all these questions. Why isn't anybody telling me the answers I want to know?
Right.
I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this. And then I'm going to leave. I'm getting tired of you not helping me out. I came here looking for money and I've not found very much money. Now, I understand. I get your point, because when you isolate that spot on the tape and you play it back the couple of times that you did, is the pitch higher than I anticipated hearing, knowing that I believe the suspect to be a man? The answer is yes. That pitch is higher than I anticipated to hear. However, I just, you know, our voices do funny things. Everything does funny. I'm just stating that this is a heightened situation. This is not a calm situation on either part, the victims or the suspect. And I know that sometimes when people are yelling, some people project a higher pitch at times, thrown into a stressful situation. Somebody's pitch could go up or down, depending on their emotion at the time as well. If this individual is angry or scared themselves, who knows what their voice could do. But I agree with you, Captain. A higher pitch than I would anticipate regarding a male suspect of that size.
911 emergency. Stay on the line. Let me get you to Tinley Park. Don't hang up.
The best part of spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless. When Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless. With Mint Mobile's limited time deal, and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. Save a lot of money with Mint Mobile. Get their great mobile wireless service delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. That's premium service at a great price. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
All right, we're back.
Cheers. And you know what, Captain? I know I'm a few days early, but we won't have another show out before then. So happy birthday to you, my friend.
I'm officially old.
It's the captain's birthday. Ahoy. Ahoy. All right, back to the case.
You've been drinking too much.
Well, I thought you were going to give me like a nice cheers back, and instead of nothing not happened.
It's not your birthday. You don't
nothing
get no
happened,
cheers.
But you know, usually somebody goes cheers, somebody else goes cheers, and then you move on.
Okay.
Surveillance footage. Now, one thing we've touched upon a little bit here, Captain, there were some surveillance footage, some video taken from the Target Superstore across the street. Now, it's estimated that these cameras, well, not estimated, it's reported that these cameras were roughly 100 yards away from the what we're about to talk about. And this being two vehicles that were spotted in the lane, in front of the Lane Bryant store, that were leaving the parking lot around the same time as it's estimated that the suspect was leaving.
Yeah, here's a couple problems with this. First of all, is the time correct on surveillance? Like in many cases that we've covered, there's been cameras, but the times weren't correct.
Right.
So that is one thing that we have to think about with this surveillance.
Well, I've seen the timestamps on the surveillance footage, and it is a little off of this mark a bit. But the report that I found that I find to be the most credible states that they believe that these vehicles were seen exiting or leaving those spots sometime between 10:46 and 10:49 a.m.
So they'd be off. The time would be off on the actual tape.
Correct, just slightly.
Few minutes.
And I think the timestamp on the surveillance footage, if I remember correctly, is slightly ahead of that. It's running a little faster than that. But the way that they can kind of determine how accurate the time is we have within maybe minutes or seconds even, mm-hmm. we have a general idea of what time the police officer is going to state that he arrived on the scene. So once they can confirm using the other surveillance footage what time these vehicles were seen leaving, they can compare that in comparison to when the officer arrived to see how close they can get to that time. Now, what are we seeing in the video? Well, first off, anybody out there that has seen this video will 100% back me up on this. This is some grainy footage
right.
that was taken from approximately 100 yards away. And police have even commented on this to the point of stating that, you know, while this is helpful to the investigation, what it does not allow them to do because of the distance is read license plate numbers.
Right.
Or to possibly identify people that might be sitting inside these vehicles. But what it does show is a small black SUV and a black sedan. Now, both of these vehicles are at the Lane Bryant and then leaving around the time of the shooting. So the thought here is when police are asking the community for help, you know, the first thing that they're going to ask is that the driver of these vehicles come forward.
Right.
You know, if you were at Lane Bryant around this time and this is your car, come forward. We just want to talk to you, see if you saw anything. Even if you think it's nothing, we want to know what you know. I find one thing a little interesting here, though. If you listen to early reports, it states that police are looking for the driver of the small black SUV as well as the black sedan.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you fast forward like months later, they seem to still be looking for the driver of the small black SUV, but we don't hear them outwardly asking for the driver of the black sedan to come forward. So I don't know if that means that person has come forward, identified mm-hmm. themselves, told them what they know, and it's nothing. And they want their identity to remain anonymous. It's generally believed that the driver of the SUV could be our suspect.
Yeah.
And I've seen on several sites, we talked specifically about the Reddit site, where they did name several possible models, makes and models of that SUV.
That's how bad the footage is.
That being a Honda or a Kia, mm-hmm. possibly a Toyota. I've not been able to find where police have stated, we believe it was this make, this model, this year. Nowhere could I find that. So for purposes of staying on task, I think that we continue to report that it is a small black SUV that is in question. And again, it seems to be that out of these two vehicles, it's believed that the suspect might have been in that fleeing the scene in that small black SUV.
Well, what's important about this is if you knew about this case, lived in the area, if there was somebody that you possibly suspected could have done this, then you kind of reverse engineer it. Did they have a black SUV, a small black SUV that they would be able to use?
Now, one thing I also want to point out there that we heard in an earlier clip today that we used for today's trailer, the start of the show, was that you heard the reporter stating that 10 years on the 10-year anniversary of this case, of the shooting at Lane Bryant and it being unsolved now for 10 years, that police released a 3D composite sketch of our suspect. And I like this, Captain, because to me, when I look at this 3D version, and if anybody out there is familiar with this case and hasn't done any internet sleuthing on it in a while, I beg you to get on your computers, on your tablet, and check some stuff out, because that 3D image is, one, it's very haunting. You almost feel like you're staring directly at the face of the person that did this. That's how detailed it looks to me.
We'll and put two, that on the website and Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff.
And two, the original composite sketch, I felt was pretty general. I don't feel like it gave me a good sense of what I should be looking for, who I should be looking for, as where the detailed 3D account was much better for that.
Well, I feel like we've covered a lot. Do you have any questions that you think we should go over?
Well, that's a big part of the frustration regarding this case. Yes, yeah. I do feel like we've covered a lot. I feel like we've answered some questions. However, I feel like there's a lot of questions out there. And again, I know we say this a lot. We sound like a broken record. We understand that the investigation has to hold some things back. I feel like there are a few items out there that could really help, especially after 10 years when you're really asking the public to come forward and help you out with this situation.
Yeah, this sketch will help, but it would be nice if there was some other piece of information that they could give us.
Well, and that's what I mean here. And I wonder if, you know, what are they holding on to? Is what they've released, is that just the tip of the iceberg? I mean, they've released what they believe to be a 3D composite sketch of the suspect.
Right.
They've released video footage of a possible suspect vehicle. We've also heard snippets of the 911 call where you can kind of hear the suspect in the background shouting or yelling or communicating with the hostages.
Right.
Some things that I call into question here, though, is we get a nice, good description of what the suspect was wearing that day, even down to the point of the potential thought that there might have been some type of packaging tape or duct tape in the suspect's coat pocket, possible that the suspect had manicured fingernails. But the weird thing here is we also hear that the suspect may have left behind a baseball cap. If that's the case, can we just say for sure if that happened? And two, can we see what that thing looked like?
Now, what team was it?
Right. I say baseball cap as a general term. And I think it's been reported that way, but it could just be some kind of hat, a baseball style hat.
Right.
So maybe no team on it, but it could be a company, could be any. There's a lot of indicators on there that could help get you to the conclusion of the identity of this person. You know, people can recognize an article of clothing just as well as they can a grainy surveillance footage of a vehicle or a possible composite sketch of the actual suspect. Was there, in fact, a hat that was left behind? If so, what does it look like? I would love if they would release pictures of that. The other item, too, I wish that, forget the DNA. I'm going to get over the DNA. We don't need to know if they have DNA or not. They can handle that portion of it. But I think these things are a little more simpler than
glad,
I have.
Glad you're going to let them handle that.
I'm going to let that all go. Right. But here's the other thing. The possibility that the suspect, remember we said that he was using the ruse of some type of delivery. And he had papers with him that were supposed to be a part of that delivery. Well, here's my guess. I'm guessing that, these women that were at the store, these are not dumb ladies. There was something on those papers that guy had. And what I mean by that is that he's not going to be able to walk in there with some blank pieces of paper or something that has nothing to do with anything at all and just be able to go, hey, I'm here to do this delivery. My name's Joe, you know, and, right. and Rhoda and these other ladies fall for it. She was doing preventative measures to call another store thinking that there was a potential mix up in some kind of delivery. Now, yes, he could have likely found some pieces of paper somewhere that look like they're from a delivery. He could have grabbed an invoice from somewhere else. But what I'm getting at is there was enough information on those pieces of paper that he was carrying with him. And there's many reports that state that he left those at the scene, that the police recovered those.
Right.
At the very least, could we find out, one, do they still exist? And B, what was printed on those papers? Is there anything on those papers that would provide any type of information that could lead us to a potential suspect? Meaning, why all these years later haven't these papers been released to the public to help with this investigation? And it could be something as simple as these were papers that this person took from where they worked.
Mm-hmm.
They took them out of somebody's car, just like the baseball hat. There's a million ways that somebody can see something. Somebody can see the right information and piece it together, and you get that phone call. You get that tip that you need.
You're wearing me out, man.
I'm wearing you out.
You're so passionate.
Well, here's the thing. We've seen plenty of cases where we're sitting there 15, 20, 25 years later, and they're like, oh, yeah, okay. We have this piece of information. We have this piece of evidence. We've been holding on to it since day one. Let us show you the general public this now and ask for your help about it now. Right. And at some point it gets to be too late.
Right.
I don't want to be sitting here 20 years from now and they're like, here's the papers. Here's the ball cap. Tell us what you think.
Yeah. So what do you think on this case?
As far as a suspect goes, let me go through this one at a time here. I only got two things to go through.
Yeah. Okay.
So one before the other. But the first one is the case is very strange to me in the sense that it seems like a strange target unless this person was just looking for a few $100s. But to me, that would be like a smash and grab. That would be like, get in there, create as little chaos as possible, get your $200, $300, and then get the hell out of there. That's not what happened in this situation. For some reason, this person decided that they needed to take these individuals to the back room, what is reported as an employee break room in the back, which seems like a strange place to me. I thought with the ruse of the delivery that you're trying to work one of two angles. Either A, you're trying to get into the store before it opens up, where either you think that there's more money involved in the robbery, or where you won't have to encounter any customers. So if you're not using it to do that, and he was aware that the store was open, then the only other reason for using the ruse of a delivery is to maybe work your way into the back parts of the store, into the office of the store, without causing a commotion out in the store front, you know, on the floor, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what he was using these papers for. But it seems like a strange target to me. It seems like a strange way to carry out a crime. The other thing, too, is if you worked your way back to the office using those papers, it sounds to me the additional customers came in later while this robbery was in progress. So he took time out from what he was doing to go and capture these two individuals, take them to the same location, and bind them as well. It sounds to me like we have a situation. I don't know why he was in that store for as long as he was.
Yeah.
The sexual,
or why he would rob a store like that anyways.
Well, and the sexual component to this is very weird as well. Now, I know it's not terribly uncommon for an offender to fondle one of the hostages or say weird sexual things to one of the hostages. I know it's not terribly uncommon, but it seems odd to me that this individual picked a Lane Bryant store where you might expect to find nothing but females there.
Right.
And then that sexual aspect occurred. If money was the thing, why aren't you just getting your money and getting the hell out of there?
Yeah, it could be sexually motivated. And then the 911 call was placed that spooked them. They had to get out of there.
or this person's incredibly unstable. Because it's...
Ah, that's what I think.
It's either there's a sexual component to it, or this person got in there, didn't really know what they were doing, started losing control fast, or got angry because whatever or however much money they thought they would get, they didn't get. Mm-hmm. And they got angry at the hostages. And then, like you said, now they're already angered. And then they find out about the 911 call. They panic or they're angered more. And they're going to take out that anger on all of those women there. Now, my theories on who this person is, they're not super detailed. But my gut tells me that this person is not local to Tinley Park in any way. The 2010 demographics of the area, it would have been 88.8% Caucasian, 3.7% African-American, and 3.9% Asian. So just playing the numbers there would tell me that this individual might not be local to the area. Plus, I also do not think that it's any coincidence that the Interstate 80 is right there by the scene, right by the store.
Mm-hmm.
He could have walked into any store that he wanted. He chose that store for a specific reason. I also believe that this was not the first time. This may be the only time this man was ever in this Lane Bryant store, meaning he didn't case the joint in advance for this robbery. And I have 2 points to this thought. One, the guy walks in and it's thought that he was looking at the ceiling, looking for cameras. And two, the surviving witness who worked at the store, you know, the majority of the time, the super majority of the time, the clientele is strictly female at this store, not male. And so it's possible that if this man had been in the store before, that he might have stood out in some form that may have been memorable to her.
Right.
And we don't have any evidence that she has seen this person before the day. So that's my only thoughts on it, that the guy probably wasn't local. And I do believe that was his first and only time in that store.
All right. Is that your thought? Done?
That's as much as I have.
Okay. Well, you keep saying he, and I'm going to keep saying she. I believe that this is a female. I believe that the surviving witness did not get a good enough look at this individual. I think maybe she heard this individual, and it was maybe of a more of a male tone to begin with. And so she's assuming she saw a man. That's just what my gut is telling me. That's also what my ears are telling me when I listen back. And if that is the suspect on that 911 call, to me, that sounds like a female. Why? I think it's more of a, you know, super bikes type thing where this individual, she went into this Lane Bryant at some point. She, you know, had bad service, something. I don't think the motivation was to rob the store. Mm-hmm. I think the motivation was some type of revenge. And that's why let's gather up all these people and let's put them in the back and let's duct tape them. I don't know how long the person thought they were going to be in there for. But I think once that 911 call went out and she saw it, she killed all the people and then she left. And I think she left in the small black SUV. And most men, I would, you know, maybe this is sexist on some level, but it's like most men will drive bigger SUVs. Women will drive smaller SUVs. So that's, and the manicured fingernails, that makes sense. And there's just little things that are really hard to explain in this case, but they start making a little more sense. Like the cornrows with the braid in front starts making a little more sense when you go, well, that's more of the way a female would do their hair.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just what my gut is telling me. And that's what my ears are telling me. And I think it was something like where the person felt wronged and they were going to prove a point, you know, or they're going to kill people. I mean, this person is a psycho.
Well, and that's what I mean. And I'm, you know, I'm sticking with my thoughts, but that's what I mean. And I like that you bring up the Superbike case that we've covered here, because that was really once that thing was solved, you're like, holy shit, this whole time the motivation would make for this murders and this crime would make zero sense to anybody but the person that perpetrated the crime.
Right.
And the biggest problem I have with this Lane Bryant case is, why, if they were there to rob, why did they stay in the store for so long? 40 minutes is a long time when you're trying to rob the store, especially. That's why the phone call from the manager to another store would be important to me, because if 25 minutes of that was this quote unquote delivery person just standing around waiting for information,
right,
then 40 minutes doesn't seem so long. But if that phone call happened within minutes of that individual walking into the store, this person stayed in the store for an incredibly amount of long amount of time.
Right.
And furthermore, here's what you wonder on your part. If this was a revenge killing, or if this was for reasons we will never understand, then how long did this individual intend on staying in the store? Was it only the 911 call that stopped them from staying? Who's to say this person wouldn't have stayed in there as long as possible and kept picking off the individuals customers as they come in? Each customer comes in, they are quickly escorted to the back room. They're bound and they become another hostage.
Mm-hmm.
So I like where your thinking is. The other thing too, with the surviving witness, it may have in a hyper panic situation like this, it may have simply been enough that if a female offender was wearing male clothing,
right,
that might have thrown her off, and she might fully believe that she saw a male when in fact it was a female.
All right. So I guess I'm right.
You're not right, but
it's my birthday, so I'm right.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I'm just not changing my opinion.
But you're just not going to say I'm right.
Here we go, Captain. So Speaking of females, this week's recommended reading, we are recommending Hell's Princess, The Mystery of Belle Gunness, The Butcher of Men by Harold Schechter. And I've mentioned his name before on this fabulous show that we do. I've also recommended his books before. Harold Schechter is one hell of an author and one of the best researchers out there. So I recommend that you pick up Hell's Princess. This is the definitive rendering of one of the most brutal of all female serial killers. This book had me on the edge of my seat into the last page. So check out Harold Schechter's new book, Hell's Princess.
And if you're ever looking for good true crime books to read, make sure you go to our website, truecrimegarage.com, because we do have the recommended page and there's a list.
Yes. And for everything true crime, check out truecrimegarage.com. And for all of our garage friends out there that are on social media, you can follow us at True Crime Garage. If you are following, make sure you wish the captain a very happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday to you, Colonel.
Until next time, friends, be good, be kind, and don't litter.